Hello again, and welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic we boomer women need and ought to be passionate about, getting our financial houses in order as we look toward retirement. This evening, we are turning around the am I saving enough question and asking, will I run out of money in retirement? Or put another way, is the 4% rule still valid? Now, if you're like me, listeners, I had not heard of the 4% rule, but fortunately Pam knows about it, so she's going to be talking to us about it. But let me tell you a little bit more and introduce her before we get going into that. Retirement savings is really a topic that we've looked at before, and it's a gravely important one, especially considering that current research shows 50% of us Americans have not saved for retirement and are therefore feeling some real anxiety about how we're going to afford retirement. This is especially crucial considering that longevity experts now tell us that given advances in health and safety, we will all likely be retired, and I say that retired in quotes, for at least 30 years. I say that in quotes because there will be many people that will find that they need to continue working because they can't afford to retire. So the concept of running out of money is a big question that many boomers have, and we're going to talk about it again tonight. But before we do, as I promised, I will introduce myself and our guest expert, Pam Sams, and then we'll talk a little bit about the call and start with Pam's question. My name is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those that we do every month, is one of the ways that we serve our membership. Tonight, we are again speaking with one of our favorite guests, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, a chartered retirement planning consultant and NABBW's retirement planning associate. Pamela will be guiding us through this discussion on the question of will I run out of money in retirement or is the 4% rule still valid? Pam Sams is an expert in personal finance who advises her clients and us on information related to money and financial planning. She is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. Her firm's focus is helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by learning the importance of placing our own needs first. Pam begins her work with each client by making sure she understands each woman's goals and then works up an individualized financial plan. Thanks for joining us again tonight, Pam.
Thanks for having me, Ann. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Thankfully, I'm staying out of all that rain that we're having around the country, so I'm hoping that you are too.
Yes, I am, and I'm very glad to be here tonight and talk about our topic. As I explained to you a couple of months ago, that's one of the areas or the topics that I've actually been speaking about a lot in my workshops and seminars throughout the D.C. area because it's just on the forefront of everybody's mind is, you know, having enough money. So I'm glad that we're able to jump in and talk about that one today.
Yes, I agree. It really is an important topic. And I'm sure that not only are you talking about it, but in your practice, you probably meet with your new clients, you probably find that most of them are like most people, I think, like to think of themselves as rational spenders and investors, people who work hard and optimize the use of our hard-earned money. But then the problem, as I see it, is that we aren't branded with a sign on our forehead or something that says our expiration date. So these days, knowing how much money a person needs to live through retirement is a bit of an educated guess, it seems to me. And that's why today's topic, the concern that we might outlive our money in retirement, is such a heavy one. So whether we look at the question in front of us as, have I saved enough, or whether we look at it as, how much can I spend in retirement without running out of money, the bottom line, as I see it, is essentially still the same. How long will I live, and how much money can I safely spend annually? So that leads to the fact that I first read an article about the 4% rule and brought it up to you, as you said, a couple months ago, and I said, I don't know what the 4% rule is, but mm-hmm. Can you tell me about it, and let's talk about it. I think it would be a good topic. So since there might be other people listening that are like me and did not ever hear of the 4% rule in retirement, maybe mm-hmm. my first question ought to be, what is the 4% rule?
Yeah, and that is a very good question. And a lot of people aren't familiar with it that are probably not in the and the financial planning or the finance industry, because that's usually the key question, is that retirees or people who are looking to retire fairly soon have, is how much money am I going to need to live off of when I'm on a monthly basis or annual basis and not run out of money. So one of the 4% rule is actually one of a variety of different retirement income strategies that you can use. The 4% rule refers to the withdrawal rate. So what you're looking at is the amount starting, the annual amount of your starting portfolio, and then whatever your portfolio is, you can withdraw 4% annually from that for a given period of time. And, you know, hopefully you don't run out of money. Now, it was derived from a formula, actually by a financial planner back in the 90s, Bill Bergen, and he came up with a formula based on kind of a portfolio of you know, 50% stocks, 50% bonds, based off on an average portfolio, I believe it was like $1 million. And then he looked at, you know, of course, statistically looking at the formula, conservatively looking at, you can do 4% and live, you know, or at least withdraw an ample amount of retirement income for over, you know, a 30 to 40 year, or you wouldn't, you know, in essence, you wouldn't run out of money in your retirement, because most people are probably looking at a 25 to 30 year retirement anyway. So that is where it was derived from, is really what would be a relatively conservative number to withdraw, the withdrawal rate that you can use on your portfolio in order to maintain your retirement, maintain your standard of living in retirement, because you don't want to take out too much, or you don't want it, well, you know, too little would, you know, really just kind of depends on what you need things for. But what people were doing was basically running the risk. Weeks like you would do when you were working, and that may be whatever you needed. So, you know, people were drawing out 6, 7, 8%, and there would be risk there to possibly in retirement run out of money if you were withdrawing money at a pretty aggressive rate. So 4% was a fairly conservative number that worked for revisiting that, or at least financial planners as well as other economists are really looking at, is it still valid based on, you know, the way the economy is growing, low inflation rates that we've been experiencing, can we still maintain the level of rates of return in a portfolio, even that 4%. So some people are, you know, revisiting that. But that's, in essence, the 4% rule is really looking at the withdrawal rate that you can, you know, conservatively withdraw enough money to live in retirement without running out of money.
All right. So historically, since the 90s, when this gentleman came up with it, it's been effective until up to when, would you say?
I started, you know, looking at, or at least seeing articles, or looking at, you know, people, you know, reevaluating probably over the last, I would probably say several years, you know, after, especially after the 2008 financial crisis, because that was such an anomaly that people experienced that, you know, of course, you know, if you're doing 4% in a portfolio that had a significant hit in 2008, then that's where people's like, well, maybe, you know, 4% is not the number that we should be working with, because, you know, in essence, people may have had to go back to work or do other things and maybe not even do 4%, maybe even doing 2 or 3. So that's why, you know, it has become a little, I would say, under fire over the, you know, the last several years as well. But the history is really, like I said, the 1998 study that was done. And actually, the actual paper was called Retirement Savings, Choosing a Withdrawal Rate That Is Sustainable. So that was what they looked at statistically, that, you know, 4% had become, quote unquote, you know, quoted as the safe withdrawal rate in based on that study to use in retirement. But, you know, nowhere in that study does it really refer to, you know, that's a hard, fast rule. It's one of those rule of thumbs, but, you know, it's what people started to, and at least financial planners, and of course, you know, most people in the industry had, you know, read the paper and read the different studies, and 4% kind of, you know, kind of stuck over the, over those, that time period until, like I said, now. What it also looked at was, you know, the conclusion was, you know, most retirees would likely, you know, benefit from a combination of stocks and bonds, probably half and half portfolio. Mm-hmm. But it also looked at, you know, adjusting those withdrawals during the retirement years. So 4% and then an adjusted inflated withdrawal, maybe bump up to maybe 4.2%. You know, it's kind of, you know, with fractions, it's kind of hard to withdraw those. Mm-hmm. But what right. you would have to do is look at a CPI adjusted withdrawal during those retirement years. It's not to say that one year you're going to have extra expenses and then you may need to take out maybe five, maybe six. It's on a consistent level that you're looking at, you know, that 4% being sustainable over the life of the portfolio. So that is kind of the history, is really looking at the statistical study that was done back in 1998 based on a 50-50 portfolio of stocks and bonds, adjusted, of course, for inflation, and then looking at 4% being, quote-unquote, the safe withdrawal rate to use, and but not a hard, fast rule. So that's why we're basically revisiting right now.
All right. Well, if we're revisiting, then does that mean that there are updates to the 4% rule?
Yeah, with anything, there's always updates. So what happened is that back in 2011, like I said, of course, right after, you know, with the fallout of, you know, 2008, is that there was an updated research on the study. And that one was called Portfolio Success Rates, Where Did We Draw the Line? So they looked at, can we sustain the 4% rule? Is it actually maybe 3% to be, you know, more of a conservative number versus the 4? Mm-hmm. And they did a sample test of clients who had had planned to retire, looking at lower initial withdrawal rates at 3%, also maybe in between 4 to 5, and seeing what was sustainable. And then based on those numbers that were experienced in 2008, they came up with probably a little bit lower number, which would probably be about 3%. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, 2008 was such an anomaly with that. What was used in the original 1998 study was, I believe, it looked at historical rates between 1926 and all the way up to, you know, of course, 1998, and I think there was an anomaly somewhere, probably in the 70s, when there was, you know, the oil crisis and a bunch mm-hmm. of other things where the market right. was acting up. So there were some test years in there as well, but probably nothing like we experienced in 2008. So that's why the revisit and the updates on, can we sustain the 4% based on that, and especially also the caveat of what we didn't experience in the 70s, and you know I think it was maybe 69-70 in the original study, is a low interest rate environment. So what we're experiencing now is we don't have so much inflation, but can we sustain the portfolio? Is it going to grow enough based on rates of return in a low interest rate environment enough to mm-hmm. sustain a 4%? Because usually mm-hmm. what you need to look at is probably a 2% margin. So if you're withdrawing 4% out of your portfolio needs to be growing at least 6% or more in order to sustain a 4%. But if we're not getting 6, how can we really withdraw 4? So that is the concern, is that we're in a low interest rate environment and the portfolio may not be able to grow appropriately enough to sustain those 4% over that time period. And also, you know, our age-old problem that we always discuss is people living longer and longer as well, so our portfolios have to last longer. So low interest rate environment, not growing appropriately, and stretching the portfolio probably longer than what the initial study had determined, really also puts that 4% rule under strain. So that's why some of the updates have occurred with the new 2011 study, and then probably looking at more of a 3% versus that 4%.
All right. Well, that's good to understand, and certainly, you know, when inflation was at its highest, we were, you know, complaining about high interest rates when we wanted to buy a house or a car or something, but at least that inflation was also serving a positive purpose, although I don't think anyone saw it that way at the time. But
exactly. I had that, you know, initial conversation with a client the other day, is that, you know, they were complaining about, you know, being in a I think it was a 30% tax bracket, and I said, well, you know, you guys were in 1975, that could be 70%, you know, on your tax versus 30. So, you know, everything is relative based on what time period that you're in. So, yeah, that's the thing about, you know, when you're in a low interest rate environment, it's good for when you're borrowing money, but when you're actually trying to accumulate money, that's where the challenges come from.
Well, then I think the next question that I would certainly want to ask you is, Pam, what do you personally think of the 4% rule?
Well, I mean, I think that is, there's going to be some challenges. I think it's more of a, you know, the rule of thumb and not the hard, fast rule. So, you know, statistically, looking at sustaining a portfolio over a 30-year time frame based on our current conditions, probably the 4% rule really needs to be revisited, or perhaps in conjunction with another retirement income strategy, which, you know, there's a variety of different ones that are available. But it's really the general idea is how much retirement income your savings can support. And the 4% rule really tells you that, you know, depending on your desire to have retirement income keep up with inflation, are you able to sustain that 4% over that period of time? Those are the challenges that I see moving forward. Of course, you know, I always have that conversation with people that are looking to retire, is go over a variety of different retirement income strategies, 4% rule being one of them. But, you know, based on the way the portfolio is behaving and growing, and also where we are with the economy and what's going on with the interest rates, it's going to be a challenge in order to sustain the 4% rule. So I have read the 2011 updates on it, and I'm probably looking at, you know, that more conservative number in order to more of a safe withdrawal rate versus the 4. So that's my opinion, is really looking at probably something a little bit lower until we get a handle on, you know, are we going to get interest rates moving in the future in order to sustain your portfolio to grow appropriately enough to go back to the 4. So probably more of a conservative, you know, in order to sustain the portfolio. So, you know, but the risk, and it's always risk involved, is what people say, is that, you know, if I live too conservative, I do 3, then I have, you know, more money, or I may have more money left over and then I have to give it to, you know, I leave an inheritance versus I could have lived, you know, more lavishly, so to speak, versus that. So that's always going to be a challenge, is that, you know, if you end up being too conservative, that, you know, you didn't take out enough, you could have, you know, you've been more frugal with your money, you could have done something a little bit different if you had took out a little bit more money. So that's always going to be, you know, that's one of those things that I get from clients all the time, is that, you know, well, if I do this, you know, maybe I'll have more left over. You know, I really don't want to have to leave a big inheritance to my children. I want to live like I want to live. So, you know, that's one of the challenges with the 4% rule as well, or even going more conservative at 3, is not maintaining your lifestyle and going too conservative. So those are some of the challenges that I think you would have with, you know, either the 4% rule or even going down to a 3% more conservative rule, is to take less income and maybe not live more of a lavish lifestyle that you want.
Okay. Well, then when your clients come to you and they say, should I use the 4% rule, are you going to tell me that it depends on the client's personal situation?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the best word that I always use with people, is that it depends, because everybody's different. You know, like I said, some people, depending on, you know, what they've grown their portfolios to, you know, they may be okay with 5 or 6%, you know, as a withdrawal rule, or some people may need to do a 3%. So it really just depends. But, you know, it's the 4% rule, like I said, is really a general guideline. So I don't, you know, think anyone should use it actually to decide how much to withdraw each year until they've really kind of looked at what their portfolio value has been calculated, what they want to do in retirement, how much are they going to actually need to live the lifestyle they want, and then you kind of back into a number from there. So, you know, it's usually looking at, you know, retirees, what their own plan and what they are based on their expected resources to be in terms of retirement. So, of course, we always, you know, talked about Social Security, maybe annuities, other fixed resources, and then you can determine from your other portfolios how much you can withdraw from that to supplement, because you always want to look at having, at least try, if you can, to have your fixed income resources like Social Securities or maybe annuities or pensions or something that's fairly guaranteed on a monthly basis, to have half of your retirement needs coming from those resources. So, on the other hand, if you have portfolios that are invested in the market, maybe 401ks, maybe IRAs, you're not really susceptible to those market volatilities and have to worry so much about that 4% rule, because you know you have some guaranteed monies that are built into your retirement income in order to sustain your monthly. So if you have, you know, a relatively good pension that maybe, you know, from government jobs or state employees or, you know, companies that still have pensions, you know, the 4% rule, the use of the 4% rule for a retiree looking at most of retirement income coming from fixed resources may not, you know, be much, I wouldn't say much use, but they're probably not as concerned because, you know, they have this, it's more of a supplement on the other side, looking at IRAs or 401k money from that. But also another reason the 4% rule becomes moot for retirees as well is that once you reach age 70 and a half, we had talked a little bit about this probably several months ago, is that there's a required minimum distribution from IRAs that the government tells you you have to take when you reach 70 and a half, because they haven't taxed those resources yet. So mm-hmm. what happens with that is that you're going to have to start withdrawing, or at least sometimes that withdrawal may be a higher amount than 4% because mm-hmm. you haven't been taxed on it, and the government said you have to take it. The IRS, you know, says you got to take this amount. So that 4%, like I said, becomes a moot point at that point because you have these monies that you have to take out. Granted, you don't have to spend it, but you do have to withdraw it from your IRA, so you may want to, you know, maybe reinvest it someplace else or put it aside in savings or something. But mm-hmm. that, you know, it may take more than 4% out of those accounts versus, you know, somebody else who's really looking at maybe a portfolio that's not invested in an IRA. Then those may be subject to the 4% rule. Those monies that have not yet been taxed, IRAs, 401ks, things like that, are subject to the 70.5 rule. And whatever the IRS says you have to take out, you got to take out. So that number may be 6%, it may be 7%, but mm-hmm. you have to do that. So, you know, those are probably the people that should use it. You know, it's really, like I said, I'm going to say it again, it depends mm-hmm. on what situation that you have. If you have a variety of different resources that are fixed resources, like I said, Social Security, annuities, pensions, the 4% rule will be more of a supplement for other portfolio monies that you have. And then, of course, once you reach 70.5, it's just kind of free game with mm-hmm. whatever the government tells you. You got to take out of your IRAs from there.
Mm-hmm. All right. So would you say then that the 4% rule would still work as somewhat of a guideline, or would you go back to that statement that you said it depends?
It's going to depend. But now mm-hmm. they also did another paper. Of course, they're always doing papers. 2013, mm-hmm. And it was also titled, it was a 4% rule is not safe in a low yield world. So that
okay.
was came out recently over the last couple of years to use. So, you know, what came out of there is that the success of the 4% rule in the U.S. may be a historical anomaly, and that people who may wish to consider their retirement incomes more broadly than really relying solely on systematic withdrawals from a volatile portfolio. So, you know, all of the articles that and or studies that have recently come out because of today's low interest rate environment are really leaning towards not having the 4% rule as a general guideline, because, you know, we're not making the rates of return inside of the portfolio to sustain a 4% over a significant amount of time in order to not run out of money, because mm-hmm. you know, with those variables, the low interest rate environment, and then people living longer, the 4% rule may not work as a general guideline. So what they also had stated in that study is that it cannot be treated as a safe initial withdrawal in today's low interest rate environment. And looking at historical data, what they were looking at were the bond yields and the dividend yields on stocks were much higher in the original study that I explained mm-hmm. before than we are
right.
seeing today. So that's why the revisions and the 4% rule being on the table, as maybe we shouldn't be using it as a guideline we were doing between, let's say, 1998 to, let's say, 2000, even 2011 is probably when they updated the study. And just even recently, you know, in 2013, looking at, are we able to sustain the 4% in the lower interest rate environment? And we probably shouldn't be using it so much as a guideline. But if you are to use more of a withdrawal rate or a safe initial withdrawal rate, you're probably looking at more 3% versus something that's a little bit higher. So most of the studies that and papers that have recently reviewed the subject, looked at more of a conservative number versus the 4%. So,
okay.
You know, I guess the long answer to that, or the short answer to the long answer, would be it's really probably not working so much as a guideline as it had in the past.
Okay.
And
well,
that's kind of where we've been looking at.
Okay. Now that brings me to a question that my brain is listening to all of this that you're saying, and so then I'm going to something like a situation, say, with my parents. My parents
okay.
are in their mid-80s, and say that they had, you know, been following along a plan, which they have, you know, both my mother and stepfather and my father, you know, have obviously been following a plan, but say that it was that they were working with their financial planners and they had been working with a 4% rule. So now they're in their mid-80s. Is it advisable at that point to say to a client, I think that you need to start spending more conservatively? Or do you say, well, you've lived to your mid-80s, your life ahead of you is probably not going to be that long?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to venture to say at that point it's probably okay, you know, to continue that particular strategy, especially, you know, for people that are, you know, well into their 80s. Probably, you know, going more conservative, I mean, it may help a little bit, but I believe, you know, if they're continuing with the 4% rule, unless, you know, depending on, you know, looking at the portfolio and how it's structured and how it has fared with recent market volatility, you may need to cut back a little bit. But I would probably say, you know, the 4% will probably still be a valid use of that particular retirement income strategy for people at that age group. But
right.
It's always, you know, subject to, you know, reviewing what current market conditions are doing with the portfolio and then how much is still left. And then, of course, you know, longevity is still going to play a factor with that.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to ask that because I normally figured that when you and I are talking and we're having questions, it applies to us, you know, and people that would be a baby boomer age. But then going, you know, to our parents' generation, I realized it might be a different picture. So that's why I just wanted to throw that wrinkle out there and see what you know, because we might be thinking, well, maybe we need to advise our parents to be doing differently than they had. And I don't know if all parents are like mine, but, you know, mine are hard to tell anything to because, you know, you're just a kid, you know.
Exactly. There's always some challenges when you're speaking with older parents because, you know, that's kind of the way it's always been done.
Right.
So I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. But also, you know, a lot of older retirees, you know, had, you know, pretty good fixed income resources like Social Security and pensions and you know things like that, there where they, you know, worked at one employer for, you know, pretty much all their lives, and, you know, they got a really nice pension. So you know, with portfolios that have experienced, or at least with those type of retirees, a large amount of money is coming from fixed resources, and so with the 4% rule probably didn't have to, you know, use it as often as, let's say, boomers right now, like, you know, like our age that we have to consider when we retire, you know, don't have as much access to fixed resources as older generation boomers. So that's kind of what, you know, what you look at there, is that, you know, if people have a really good sizable fixed income resources for retirement, that's a good thing. So you don't really have to be as concerned about the 4% rule.
Okay. All right. Well, then you, before I diverted you with that question, you said something about using different strategies. So let's go back to that statement and say, let's talk a little bit about what do you see are some of the different strategies that we can use to manage retirement income?
Yeah, and there's a variety of them, and you know I'll talk about a few of them. One, and a lot of people or advisors and also industry experts are probably looking at what they call a bucket strategy, and not mm-hmm. so much a systematic withdrawal strategy. So what a bucket strategy looks at is kind of having you know, if you were to visualize buckets, you know, segmenting your retirement assets into certain categories. So you will have expenses for, let's say, short-term expenses for day-to-day budget items, you know, gas, food, all of those sort of things. Then you would have another bucket that would be for medium or midterm type expenses. I need to replace the car, vacation money, you know, things like that, where, you know, that may be a 3 to 5 year window of resources that you need assets for in retirement for that. And then, of course, a more of a longer term bucket where you're looking at long term expenses, of course, to replenish the medium and the short term bucket. So your long term bucket is probably going to still be your growth bucket that is still invested in the market, still exposed, of course, to growth in order to replenish the other two buckets. So that retirement income strategy has become more popular than just looking at a strict, we're going to do a 4% in order to cover your retirement lifestyle. Let's segment those so we don't need to particularly worry about the withdrawal, systematic withdrawal rate. We need to worry about how much resources we need in each particular bucket to cover those expenses, and then still having a longer term bucket as an engine to refill, in essence, the other two bucket. So, you know, if you've ever pitched water I don't know if you ever grew up on a farm, but I've visited mm-hmm. before different farms. And so you would pitch water, you know, you put one bucket into the other one, you pour water into the next one. That's how the bucket strategy works. So
okay.
the long-term bucket, you're basically refilling the medium bucket, and the medium bucket is refilling your short-term bucket. And you're still having everything categorized there for all of the resources that you would need. So, you know, that's probably the most difficult thing that they really don't teach people who are about to retire, is that you've accumulated a nest egg, but really, how do I get it out? How do I get income out of this?
mm-hmm.
And that is always that's a challenge. You're not going to get it from your employer or your 401k provider. You know, they've helped you grow the money, but they won't tell you how you actually need to get it out, or how do you turn it into resources. So there's a variety of different retirement income strategies. 4% rule, we talked about that being one of them, maybe not as valid as it had been. The bucket strategy, like I said, is a little more popular these days. So what you're looking at is first bucket being more cash and cash equivalents in order to use for your just regular day-to-day expenses and cash. So it's more conservative, probably just checking, savings accounts, maybe some CDs in there. You don't want anything that's going to be exposed to market conditions, because you need that money right away. You know, the funniest thing that I heard probably a few years back as an advisor, I didn't have him as a client, another colleague, but she was telling me, is that he had, you know, just retired, and he took all of his 401k and he just stuck it in a bank, and then he was just living off of it.
Oh.
And that's not efficient either. You know, you just mm-hmm. don't want to have a big pile of money and then you're just going to withdraw it like anything else. You have to have some type of strategy, and the bucket strategy would help out if you didn't want to use the guideline of the 4% and don't feel comfortable with that. So the mm-hmm. first bucket being cash and cash equivalents. And then, of course, the second bucket, which would be, you know, the next 5 year, 3 to 5 year period. So you're looking at market returns that are sufficient to meet those objectives that you have in that bucket. So, like I said, replacement of cars, maybe paying for a child's wedding, vacation money. You know, you want to take a nice vacation each year, so you stick away money there. So you're looking at something that's going to be able to get a decent rate of return, but still not overly exposed to market conditions. And then, of course, like I said, the term bucket. So you're, you know, regenerating in order to fill those other two buckets. That's probably the most efficient strategy that I have seen and that I also use with my clients as well. Of course, there's other ones that may not be as valid as even the 4% rule. One, of course, you've probably heard of live off the interest.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That, you know, was one that our parents used all the time. You know, you buy interest-bearing bonds or something that will be able to pay interest, and then basically it was going to be enough to sustain living off of that particular interest and not never touching the principal. So mm-hmm. that was an retirement income strategy that were people using. You know, I would probably say, you know, probably your parents or old people were, you know, really in a good situation to have a fairly significant bond portfolio where they were able to live off the interest and not touch the principal. So that could have been a retirement strategy for them. And then, of course, that evolved into the 4% rule. And then, in essence, that probably evolved into more of a bucket strategy type retirement income strategy. So, you know, those are, you know, just kind of highlight a few, like I said, you know, what I use and what probably most advisors and also industry experts are probably highlighting these days is the bucket strategy, segmenting retirement assets by category versus really looking at that systematic withdrawal rate. So if you mm-hmm. get away from that 4% systematic withdrawal rate, having some other type of retirement income strategy that would be more viable, that would work for you, is probably better, so you don't have to be as concerned, because what you're looking at is time periods versus withdrawal rates. So I need mm-hmm. money right away over the next, you know, 1 to 3 years, and then 3 to 5, and then, you know, 5+ or 10+, and then doing it all over again, basically regenerating from the longer term bucket to meet your current needs. So then you don't have to, you know, be as concerned about those withdrawal rates.
All right. So I would think that I'm saying this for a couple reasons. One is something that I read in our local weekly newspaper today, but I would say that I would think that the 10 years before retirement are probably the time when we have to be the most vigilant with making sure that our plans are working properly, so that they're doing what they're supposed to for us. And the mm-hmm. reason that I say that, and I could be wrong about that, and so if I'm certainly jump on me about that, but I was reading an article in my weekly paper today about the publisher of the newspaper, and it was talking about the publisher of my little weekly Galena, Illinois newspaper. He was saying mm-hmm. that he had bought the newspaper from the prior owners of it back when he was probably in his 30s. And he and his wife have run the newspaper along with a small staff. It's just a little weekly newspaper, but they've run it over the years. During that time, I've gotten to know him. He's very much of a character. But I also know that he's had some significant health scares during that time. But, you know, probably all of us have you know, mm-hmm. that sometime in our adult working history. But so the article was in this week's paper was talking about how he has made an arrangement with a couple where they actually both happen to work at the paper. One is a reporter and one is does ad sales, but they're a married mm-hmm. couple. And so he's made a plan where he's selling the newspaper to them, but it's not going to happen over all at once. He said, I'm 60 years old, and I expect that I'm going to be working for the next 10 years. So So I'm looking at that where I'm thinking, okay, for him, I would have to guess that his retirement plan is, you know, that all the equity that he's hoped that he's built up in the newspaper, and now he's going to sell it out and use that as, you know, kind of, at first I thought, oh, a lump sum will come to him, but then probably it's going to be paid over time because it's, you know, talking about phasing them in. So that's where I'm coming up with this plan, that it's probably our last 10 years before we want to retire is probably the time when we have to be the most on top of our game in terms of retirement, although I certainly have to applaud people in their 30s and even their 20s who are doing more savings toward retirement now than I think the boomer generation did. I think we tended to not be very good at saving when we were in our 20s and 30s.
Yeah, I think that I think we had talked about that over a few different sessions that we had talked, is that it seems as though millennials are doing a lot more saving towards retirement than even the boomers that we have before. So they're, you know, really socking away money fairly at a decent rate than, let's say, boomers did. But, you know, you're exactly right when it comes to the retirement, reviewing it. You know, I recently wrote an article in MarketWatch about it's not your grandfather's retirement. It's that, you know, it's so many moving parts to retirement now. It's not like previous generations where, you know, you went to work, you know, you put in your paperwork, I'm going to retire, you got to go watch, you got your pension, and then you were at home on the rocking chair, you know, and with a comfortable retirement. Now, you know, with, you know, our generation of boomers, you know, it's really an event when it comes to retirement. You have to really look at your strategy and what you're doing. And I would, you know, definitely, you know, 10 years out is really a good strategy, especially if you have, you know, a more, you know, complicated situation like the newspaper editor, you know, over time, if you're still in a business and you're transitioning, you know, that could be, you know, part of your strategy. If you're selling your house and you're, you know, downsizing, that could be, you know, if you're taking equity out of your house, that could be a strategy. So it's all about planning when it comes to retirement. And especially as you get closer to retirement, you know, you want to start looking at how do you start positioning your assets for, you know, how to be more tax efficient? Am I going to be paying more in taxes, or if I'm going to move to an area where the tax rate is a little bit higher, you know, so you have to start doing research. If you're going to relocate yourself, what the tax environment is in that particular state, do they have, you know, property tax, do they have sales tax, all of these things you have to look at. If you're going to be on Medicare, what the Medicare rates are in those areas, how much health care is costing you. You know, just I'm going to retire and here it is. So you want to make sure you're making the most educated and smart decisions that you can, because like I said, nobody really tells you how to take your money out. You know, they all of the providers and everybody shows you how to really, you know. And how it should be properly invested and all of those. But when it comes to how do I get my money out in the most tax-efficient manner, making sure I don't step into some of what I call education, hopefully somewhere getting it from, you know, I've been trying to, you know, really advocate for, you know, maybe employers covering it, because that's where most people they're probably, besides their homes, that's probably the largest chunk of money that they have is in their retirement plans to work. And the employer would probably be in a better position to really explain or at least bring somebody in that was knowledgeable on what do I do now with this big nest egg. You know, don't be like the person I explained before, is that you take your whole money and you just go stick it in a bank.
Stick it in a bank.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, just stick it in a bank because that's what you know to do. You know, I get a large paycheck and I just stick it in a bank and then you just live off of it. You know, there are certain things that you need to know how to do. And, you know, the 4% rule, you know, if it's valid or not, if you want to use it as a guideline, that's a retirement income strategy, the bucket strategy I talked about. There's several other ones that are out there. You probably don't have time to go through all of them. There, you know, the last time I heard, there's probably more like 10 or so. So there's a variety of different things that people really need to read up on or educate themselves before they, you know, retire, because you want to make sure you do it right, because, you know, a lot of taking monies out or transitioning them from when you were employers to now, I mean, employees to now retirees, you only get one shot at it. And if you get it wrong, you know, the IRS will be glad to take your money. You know?
Right.
So you don't want to be one of those victims that I did not know and can I get a redo? You know, some of these things you can't redo. So you have to make sure you educate yourself on what retirement strategies work best for you. If you don't have an advisor, make sure you consult one, or, you know, visit someone at your bank, or, you know, somebody that will be able to kind of walk you through the different things that you need to consider before you retire. You know, just the income part we talked about, but in several phone calls we've talked about, you know, you're going to need medical insurance and when to take Medicare and when to take Social Security and all of these decisions that you have to make prior to retirement to make sure you're doing it in the most efficient manner.
Excellent. I think that you summed it up pretty well, and as usual, it's been great having this discussion with you this evening, and so I'm just curious,
yes,
before I wrap up the call, is there anything else that you'd like to add as, you know, last minute advisories?
I think I covered pretty much everything that, you know, about the 4% rule. You know, like I said, a lot of people may not have been familiar with it. It's one of several retirement income strategies. The main thing is really just making sure what one is best for you, because, you know, like I said, my favorite answer is always it depends, because everybody's different. Each individual has their own retirement plan and what they want to do in retirement and what they're going to need. You know, everybody's number is different, you know, so, you know, somebody may need, you know, X amount of dollars, and some people may need something, you know, Y amount of dollars.
Right.
And depending on what you need, that will kind of determine what retirement income strategy works best for you as well. And then, of course, you know, what you have in terms of resources available, if you have pensions and annuities and other guaranteed sources of income that are, you know, let's say, more heavily weighted than actual investment portfolios, your strategy would be different than somebody else who had to rely solely on an investment portfolio. So a lot of things really depend on individual people and what your situation looks like.
Excellent. Now, I'm not sure if I don't think I said in the beginning that you have a wonderful website that's at www.jacksonsams.com, which is spelled like it sounds, JACKSONSAMS.com. And I know you have a huge number of articles there. I have to confess I have not read all of them. But are there articles that are there that would be related to this topic that we could send any of our listeners to check out, any articles about this type of planning?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many tons of articles on there. There is definitely one that talks about withdrawal rates as well. I believe I still have the retirement planning kit that's on there that you could go and offer. That's kind of a checklist of things that you need to consider before you retire. You know, the when should I take Social Security, when should I apply for Medicare, all of those types of things that you know need to know. So it's kind of a checklist of things. But all of the articles, also some interactive calculators that people can take a look at as well to see where they stand in terms of how much they've accumulated for retirement, how much more they need to go. If they did the 4% rule, you know, what that would look like on an annual basis. So, you know, with the interactive calculators and the articles, there's tons of information that's available
to
listeners.
I'm glad you mentioned the calculators because they're to me they're kind of like a game. You can play with them and you can say, well, if I had this much, what would happen? And
exactly.
And,
and you can slide them around and, you know, if I did, you know, if I retired or if I, you know, stuck in there 2 years longer, what my portfolio would look like or, you know, if I retired early or if I sold my house and I got equity from there and used it for this. And so you have kind of an infusion of resources. So you can play around with it as, you know, many variables as you would like. But, yeah, that's the what-if scenarios are really good to play around with and see what your situation turns out based on certain decisions that you make with your retirement resources.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to wrap up the call here right now, Pam, but I want to tell everyone who's listening to thank them for joining us this evening for this great call with Pamela Sams. If you have any questions for her after the call, you can feel free to email Pam at pamela@jacksonsams.com, or as I mentioned earlier, go to her website. There's just wonderful content at www.jacksonsams.com, and it's on a wide variety of financial topics. She's very thorough with the free content that she has there, so that's a wonderful resource that you offer for people. And anybody else who's listening who wants to know more about the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, you can find us in a number of places online, including our website. Our primary website is at www.nabbw.com. We have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com where the forum is simply people writing in and posing a question or talking about something that's going on with them, and other people, you know, comment and commiserate and cheer people on. It's an interesting place to be. And then we have our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/NABBW. And one of the things that I like to do on the Facebook page is post articles that I think are things that would be of interest to people of baby boomer age. So hopefully we've given you lots there at the end with resources help you moving forward, all of you listeners, with your planning for retirement, because certainly the concept that when I start to think about what I stated in the beginning introduction where the research I'm seeing says 50% of us are not prepared to retire, that's just appallingly frightening to me. So I'm delighted, Pam, that you're trying to do as much as you are doing to help people with this. And please, everyone that's listening, take advantage of all of those opportunities. And thank you again, Pam, and thank you to our listeners for joining us this evening. All right. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.